From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA Economics Editor Jim Randall. Our topic on this edition of the program, what are the provisions in the Republican-led tax reform plan? And if passed, what impact would it have on corporations and ordinary Americans? Our guest, Steve Rosenthal. He's a senior fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute. That's a think tank based here in Washington. Steve regularly researches, speaks, and writes on a range of federal income tax issues with a focus on business taxes. That will be particularly pertinent to our discussion because the $1.5 trillion U.S. tax overhaul under consideration delivers a huge tax cut to corporations, even though U.S. President Donald Trump said during his presidential campaign that he intended to reduce taxes for the middle class. In addition, because the Republican-led Congress has not passed any significant legislation since Mr. Trump took office, both the lower and upper chambers of Congress have rushed the bill without a single Democratic vote. They are eager to get it to the president's desk and signed into law before the end of the year. Few, if any, public hearings have been held on the legislation, which is unusual for a bill of such magnitude. Well, we'll talk with Steve Rosenthal about the politics and policy implications of the tax overhaul, chances for passage, and how it would actually affect the U.S. economy. Steve Rosenthal joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol. Happy to be here.
And I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, Jim Randall.
Happy to be here.
Our tax or economics guru. And the challenge for you, Mr. Rosenthal, is to make sense of this rather complicated legislation for our international audience. First, let's step back. What is, in your view, the impetus for this tax reform legislation? In addition to the fact that President Trump did say during the campaign that he wanted to reform the tax code, help the middle class, what is the policy and the politics, and why is it so important for both President Trump and the Republican-led Congress?
Well, there are a variety of important considerations, some of which are political and some of which are policy-driven. From a political standpoint, the president in his campaign advocated a tax plan that looks very similar to what is now moving through Congress. At a policy level, the tax plan advocated by the president and moving through Congress is basically oriented towards huge business tax cuts, corporate and non-corporate business tax cuts, with some modest tax cuts for individuals. So that's the policy behind the provision, which is cut business taxes with the hope of spurring the U.S. economy, which in theory might yet help lots of Americans.
Do you see somewhat of a discrepancy between the rhetoric and what is actually being pushed through? Because, of course, the theory behind it is that corporations would get tax cuts, perhaps they would reinvest, and that would really help the little guy, the ordinary American.
Sure, that's a theory. The large corporate tax cuts and other business tax cuts will allow corporations and businesses to retain more of their profits and to reinvest those profits in plant and equipment and hiring more workers and perhaps giving workers increases. That's the theory. In practice, this form of trickle-down economics doesn't have a lot of support, either from past experience or empirical evidence based on modeling and other ways of looking at tax cuts. But it might work out, and so that's the open question.
All right, let me turn to my colleague Jim Randall for a question.
Well, I think President John Kennedy, a very long time ago, cut taxes, and to considerable surprise, it did, in fact, increase economic growth. It did increase government revenue. But a couple of instances since then, George W. Bush, for example, cut taxes a lot, and the economy subsequently went off a cliff, pretty much, into the financial crisis. What do you think will happen this time?
Well, if you go back to the prior tax cuts, when Kennedy cut taxes, individual tax rates were much, much higher, and corporate tax rates. I believe they were bordering on 70-90% at the time for individuals. And when you look at the George W. Bush tax cuts, Likewise, there was a time in which tax rates were substantially higher and were cut in a more modest fashion. This time around, we're not really cutting individual tax rates that much. There's some restructuring of the brackets, but not much. What we really are doing is cutting business taxes fairly dramatically. Our corporate tax rate will fall from 35% to 20%, and the so-called pass-through rates will drop to maybe 25%. Those are pretty substantial drops. What will happen as a consequence of that drop? Well, the administration and many in Congress argue that will spur the economy. I'm not so sure that the economy will respond in that fashion. It might just be that the profits are distributed to shareholders and paid out as dividends or in stock buybacks. One thing I think is pretty certain is that our deficit will increase. Right now, the U.S. owes $20 trillion in national debt, and this bill is projected to increase the debt by another $1.5 trillion. The official scorekeepers have given some modest offset for growth. The Joint Committee on Taxation, where I worked, said that that would be reduced from $1.5 trillion to, say, $1 trillion. But I think directionally, we're going to increase our deficit.
There's a lot of concern about the debt, and for good reason. High debt tends to push your currency down and causes inflation and so forth. But so far, that really hasn't happened. We haven't seen what you would expect in a country that has an enormous debt. Do you think we're going to run out of luck on this issue at some point?
Hard to say. You're right, Jim, that our country has a very large debt. But if you compare our country's economic situation to other countries' economic situations in recent years, the U.S. is doing pretty well. And so I think we're still a haven for investment and economic activity.
So we're the best house in a terrible neighborhood?
Perhaps. But we are taking advantage of that now by borrowing more to fund tax cuts.
Steve, on that topic of debt, the Republicans are saying that their growth projections would most likely offset diminished revenue, since there will be tax cuts for mostly corporations, but for some middle-class Americans. Do you think those growth projections are realistic?
No, I don't think tax cuts pay for themselves. And the administration has been hard-pressed to find anyone who believes that. There's been assertions of that, both by the administration and by Republican leadership in Congress, but little support for that.
Well, this gets us back to politics. Since the impact of these tax cuts, which were meant to benefit mostly middle class and working class people, actually appear to benefit corporations, what is really driving this? To what extent are the politics, you know, the need to pass legislation at any cost, somewhat overshadowing real policy that could be beneficial?
Well, as I started, there are both political and policy objectives here. And you're right, Carol. Politically, this administration needs a win. They don't have any wins so far. And so I think the tax bill is being raced through Congress to get a win by year end. I think that will happen.
But could that be maybe a Pyrrhic victory? Because again, most Democrats, all Democrats aren't supporting it. In fact, they were pretty much shut out of the process. There were very few, if any, hearings. This doesn't reflect well, one would probably conclude, for the quality of the bill in the long run.
Well, on a couple of levels. I used to draft tax legislation as a congressional employee, and racing a tax measure through as quickly as this has been raced through is quite unusual and will leave lots of glitches. And then in terms of the stability of the new tax code after the tax bill is enacted, when taxes are merely a partisan exercise, that leaves them open to change in the future. And so this exercise has been purely partisan, only obtaining Republican votes and no Democratic votes on both the House and the Senate. And right now, a conference is being devised to negotiate the differences between the House and the Senate, but no Democrats are participating in those negotiations.
So if this is raced through, that raises the possibility that exhausted congressional staffers will make a mistake here and there. And those mistakes are likely to cause a lot of business for tax attorneys and accountants and others. How long is it going to take to sort this out, do you think?
Well, sort out from whose vantage point. As a tax lawyer, I can tell you the tax industry is pretty nimble. They will sort out in the next 2 weeks the tax steps to take starting January 1 when the bill takes effect. By contrast, the government is less nimble. It will take the government years to write regulations and interpretive guidance and to catch up with some of the glitches that will be exploited by my nimble colleagues.
So the tax code is a couple thousand pages, and all the related documents is what, something like 73,000 pages. This is adding more complexity to that. Holy mackerel.
Yes, complexity is a byproduct of the pending tax legislation, at least for businesses. There are a variety of new business rules in how we look at U.S. multinationals and their international operations, and how we look at U.S. businesses operating domestically. Very, very complicated. Now, I would say on the individual side, there is some simplification because the tax measures actually eliminate a lot of itemized deductions and then double what is known as the standardized deduction, which means that very few individuals will need to keep track of their expenses to comply with the tax rules.
It's a foreign audience here. None of the people in our audience pay U.S. taxes. They probably don't know what a deduction is. Could we define that just real quick?
Sure. U.S. employees and businesses make income, and then we allow certain reductions to the income, which are known as deductions. And those are going to be reduced, fewer deductions, and so that will simplify things for many individuals.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. We're talking with Steve Rosenthal. He's Senior Fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute. We're discussing the ramifications of the Republican-led tax overhaul and its chances of passage. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA Economics editor Jim Randall. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to loyal listener Musa Manaja from Gombe, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send us an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Steve Rosenthal. Steve, I have a real basic question. What's wrong with taxes? And why do I say that? Nobody likes to pay taxes, wherever they are. On the other hand, think about what is the purpose of taxes. They're supposed to provide revenue for the government so that it can provide goods and services to the American people, improve our infrastructure, education, clean water. So sometimes I wonder, you know, as much as we don't like to pay taxes, if we stepped back and thought about the purpose of taxes, then maybe they would be less undesirable or we would think about them differently. Because now we have people on both sides of the aisle, but particularly Republicans, who generally vilify taxes. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree, Carol. The purpose of taxes is to fund the services that we all enjoy. And the abstraction, separation of taxes from services, makes support for taxes more difficult. Having said that, I'm not sure there ever is much support for taxes. Everybody tries to reduce their taxes here in the U.S., and I suspect abroad as well. In fact, this has been going on for quite a while. Biblical times, I think the tax collectors were vilified. So this has been an age-old problem.
Indeed, but I guess sometimes, you know, the way one characterizes it, it could be less negative. But there's no question that there's a need for tax reform in this country. Jim?
Well, I think that there's a fundamental philosophical question here between conservatives and liberals, Democrats and Republicans. The conservatives advocate smaller government, less expensive government. They want to have the money and the power left in the hands of individual people and companies and so forth. But at some point, you have to pay for services. And so I guess it's a debate between what should the government's role be, how much should the government do, and who should pay for it. So how is that debate going? I mean, it seems that there's a push to have the government do less. Is that a reasonable interpretation?
Not so much for the government to do less in the near term. I think what has been described as fiscal conservatism has changed a lot over the last 20 years. It used to be that fiscal conservatism meant taxing sufficiently to pay for services, and if taxes were too high, then services would need to be reduced. Today, fiscal conservatism appears solely to be focused on the tax side of the ledger. Let's cut taxes without much attention to the spending side of the ledger, because cutting spending is unpopular while cutting taxes is popular. But that also leads to what is known as the starve the beast theory, which is if we cut taxes, eventually spending will need to be cut. And that will reflect the philosophy you've described of smaller government and less help.
There are some very concerned Democrats who are saying the deficit is the whole point of this tax cut. And the idea is that this will put the government in such a financial predicament that they would have to cut services. For example, the government-funded and run retirement program called Social Security and the health insurance program for the elderly called Medicare. And the worry by some liberals is that these very important programs would be starved and would be reduced. That would be a very unpopular move, I guess.
Yes, cutting spending on those popular programs would be damaging politically, but maybe not in the near term. Maybe we need to wait until they occur. But there's a whole other range of U.S. government spending programs that will be under stress going forward. We provide foreign assistance. We provide a pretty extensive military presence throughout the world. We service debt and money that we've borrowed both abroad and from home. And so as we add on more debt and increase that debt, say, by another $1 trillion to the outstanding $20 trillion, that's going to put more pressure in the future on a range of government expenditures. And so the U.S. may look very differently to the rest of the world in 5 or 10 years because of the budget constraints that we will face in the future as a result of tax cuts today.
Let's turn to an international perspective, Steve Rosenthal. How, under this particular tax reform, would we tax foreign profits of U.S. multinationals in the future? And how would the U.S. tax U.S. profits of foreign multinationals?
Well, the U.S. today taxes the income of U.S. multinationals, in theory, wherever that income is earned throughout the world. That's the way we tax individuals, and that's the way, in theory, we tax multinationals. But in practice, there are some loopholes that allow U.S. multinationals to defer their foreign profits until they're actually brought home to the U.S. And that has led to an anomalous situation of a lot of foreign profits that are, in effect, booked offshore. In the future, the U.S. will tax U.S. multinationals only on profits earned in the U.S. and will exempt profits earned abroad. And the thinking being that will allow U.S. multinationals to compete more aggressively with foreign businesses abroad because U.S. multinationals will not add on a tax owed to the U.S.
There's also a move to try to change the tax incentives so that fewer U.S. jobs go overseas. This is a huge political issue, and it's sort of a hardy perennial political issue. What do you think this tax proposal will do to change that, and will it work?
Well, certainly as an objective, the administration and the Republican leadership argue that lowering U.S. corporate taxes to 20% will draw both U.S. multinationals to operate more here, as well as foreign companies to operate more in the U.S. and increase employment. But one of the consequences of the U.S. shifting from what I described as a worldwide system to what is known as territorial, only taxing profits in the U.S. territory and exempting them abroad, will be that we will introduce a new wedge between profits taxed in the U.S., 20%, and profits taxed abroad, 0%. And so, on balance, it's not clear whether there'll be more jobs, factories, and profits shifting offshore after enactment of the new tax legislation than the pressure there has been before the enactment. The jury is out on that question.
So the objective, try to keep jobs in the United States, try to bring more jobs to the United States, but the unintended consequence might be that we end up sending more jobs away and increasing, for example, manufacturing unemployment.
That's entirely possible. The rules in the new tax bill are as complicated set of rules as I have ever seen in my career. And so as a tax lawyer, we delve into those rules to look for gaps and opportunities to shift jobs and profits and factories in one location to another to keep taxes low. The question is, in the new rules of the game under the pending tax bill, will that result in more jobs, factories, and profits abroad or fewer? And we just can't tell yet.
Well, that's a little odd because, you know, Mr. Trump ran on America First. He wanted to bring jobs back to the United States, provide incentives for companies to invest here in America. So to what extent will this tax bill actually accomplish that?
We don't know. Certainly the president has been consistent in his rhetoric, but I doubt the president has actually read any of the tax bills that are pending before Congress. And if he did read them, I doubt he could understand them because none of us can understand them completely. We're all scratching our heads as to what they can mean and what the implications are. But as you said earlier, Carol, this bill is being raced through Congress without hearings, without public discourse, and is being drafted behind closed doors by Republican leadership without input from any of their Democratic colleagues. And so this is quite a gamble as to what will emerge and what will happen to our country.
Now, Republicans say that there have indeed been years and years of hearings. You have a different view.
Well, the Republicans are correct. There have been years and years of hearings, mainly to complain about our existing tax rules. And everybody agrees that the existing tax rules are complicated and could use some reform. But the question is, what will this tax bill do to our existing tax rules? Will it improve them or make them worse? And on that question, we don't know. And there have not been hearings. And many of the provisions, at least the largest provisions in the tax bill, are entirely novel and new approaches to tax problems that have plagued our country for many years. And drafting tax provisions to solve difficult tax problems is quite an art. And in my view, requires lots of input and lots of discussion. But we haven't had that input and discussion.
Well, as we said earlier, it appears that these tax cuts benefit primarily corporations without any reciprocal requirement that these corporations invest the benefits from the tax cuts, higher profits, into plant or new jobs. Is that correct?
Well, yes, Carol, that's correct. These are huge tax cuts for corporations. The largest revenue loss predicted in the tax bill is the tax cut for corporations, reducing the tax rate from 35% to 20%. Now, in the law, there is no requirement that the corporations take the increased after-tax profits and use those increased profits to invest more or to hire more workers or to pay more workers higher wages. That's just the hope. Now, as a legal matter, in our capitalist system, by and large, we do not have the government direct companies to invest or to pay their workers at any particular levels. And so that leaves our economy at the behest of corporate interest, right? The corporations, we have to hope, will act in their interest and benefit our economy and benefit the workers. Now, we have relatively poor track record with cutting corporate tax rates and expecting them to use that money in a way that will benefit workers, say. We had a huge tax holiday in 2004 that allowed corporations to bring home lots of their deferred earnings at lower tax rates. But when they brought those earnings home, they distributed them to shareholders in stock buybacks and in dividends. They didn't invest more in equipment or pay workers more. And so the jury is out as to whether or not cutting taxes this go-round will result in workers benefiting.
But President Trump said he wants to help the little guys. He wants to help the so-called forgotten Americans. How, in your view, would this tax cut help the middle class?
Very little relief is going directly to the middle class. There are some, on balance, small tax reductions for the middle class, but they're not very significant. The real tax cuts, again, are the large corporate tax cuts and some of the other business tax cuts. And President Trump's theory is that as we cut corporate taxes and business taxes, their extra corporate profits will be used eventually to pay workers more money. The White House has suggested workers here will get an extra, on average, $4,000 each as a consequence of these tax cuts. So that's, I think, the larger impact, at least under the administration's view. I differ.
So what do you think the impact on average Americans is likely to be? I mean, it's difficult to foresee that, but make a guess.
Well, I think in the near term, the individuals will pay a little less in dollars of taxes, maybe a few hundred dollars lower in taxes. Again, our businesses will benefit greatly, and you need to look in large measure as to who owns those businesses to determine who benefits greatly. And those are shareholders, which are disproportionately rich, and interestingly, lots of foreign shareholders who are enjoying a run-up in stock prices here on account of anticipated tax cuts.
And of course, some analysts and critics have said, Steve, that the bill as it is being reconciled will also benefit the so-called red states, Republican states versus the blue states, Democratic states, because of what is called the state and local tax deductions. And we won't get into the details, but these wealthier states along the coast who normally vote Democratic are going to be hit. And so there is this partisan tinge to the way the bill is being written. Do you see that as well?
I think that's right. Normally, when we talk about tax reform, we couple a lowering of corporate and individual tax cuts by closing loopholes and trying to raise more money by taxing a wider range of activities. This bill does close a few deductions, but it turns out the deductions that it closes are more from the blue states and less from the red states. And then beyond that, there are a variety of social measures in this bill that, again, seem to be oriented to helping red states and not particularly affecting blue states. And so this is a political bill in addition to an economic bill.
As we close, Steve, polls show as we speak that there's not a great deal of public support for the bill. It's hovering around 29-30%. How likely do you think it is that the bill will pass by the end of the year? And what are the impediments?
I think the likelihood is very large, maybe 80-90% likelihood of passage by the end of the year. The impediments will be there are so many demands within the Republican Party for a variety of tax cuts, and the Republicans need every single vote they can muster in Congress, and giving too much in those demands or not giving enough might yet cause some tension going forward. But I think the bill will pass. The larger question, of course, is will the bill succeed? And as you suggest, Carol, there's a lot of skepticism in the public whether large corporate tax cuts and business tax cuts will, in effect, make the lives of Americans better. And that's the open question.
Steve Rosenthal is Senior Fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute. Steve, thank you for your time, for your insights in deciphering what would normally be a very complicated and mind-numbing issue. Thanks for making it so interesting and fascinating for us.
You're welcome, Carol and Jim. Thank you for your attention.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Alexander Nasserjah for booking our guest. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. Joining me on the program was VOA Economics Editor Jim Randall. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.